Welcome to this latest edition of the Real Deal Podcast on this 20th of August, 2018. I'm your host, Surreal Gerald Quinn. As I discuss the world of sports and pop culture, this program will be sent to Blog Talk Radio probably sometime early tomorrow morning. We are live streaming via YouTube, so hello to my YouTube audience out there. Of course, as you all know, it should be live. This program should be available on YouTube, I would say anywhere from 20 to 30 minutes, maybe 15 to 20 minutes after the program is up. I'm glad to be back with you. I planned on doing a podcast yesterday, but was under the weather, to say the least. And I'll tell that story later on in the program. But we begin with the queen of soul, obviously has not been easy for anybody who loves music in terms of the weekend with the passing of course Aretha Franklin, the queen of soul, one of the immortals when it came to as a vocalist, and she passed away of course at the age of 76 this past Thursday. And certainly it's something that really, kind of affected me over the weekend in terms of where my thought and where my headspace was at. Spent a lot of time, in the bed trying to get better, as well as listening to a lot of Aretha Franklin's greatest hits and her just absolute timeless music. And, when you think about, there are levels to this in terms of greatness. And, watching Michael Jordan play basketball for the first time, in the early days of Chicago, it was something different than any basketball player that I'd ever seen. Watching Michael Jackson perform was something different than any other performer that I'd ever seen. I remember the first time I saw The Godfather with Marlon Brando. It just was something different about that performance. You get to a certain level and you just automatically stand out. And that is a rare, rare feat and a rare level to reach in any field and in any walk of life. And Aretha Franklin, for me personally, I grew up listening to Aretha Franklin music, not because of my parents. It was because I just loved Aretha Franklin's voice. Now, again, you can't afford the albums. I'm just talking about just listening to her on the radio, watching the videos. You had Video Soul and, other video channels at that time. Just listening to her. And again, there was something different about this woman's voice that just stays with you. And when you reach that level of greatness, you transcend everything. You transcend race, culture, age. You transcend, it doesn't matter. Like you cover all the bases. And it doesn't matter how old a person is, it doesn't matter their culture, it doesn't matter how much money you have. When you have that type of talent, everybody gravitates towards you because you are that gifted in terms of your particular field and whatever in that particular walk of life. And that is rare air to say the least. With that comes a sense of loneliness, isolation, maybe some depression. So when I heard some of these things about Aretha Franklin, I wasn't surprised because you can't imagine. I can 99.9% of us cannot relate to that, to dealing, to having the burden of having that kind of talent, and basically being compared to yourself over and over, especially when your career spans 50 years. Because you could compare 60s Aretha to 70s Aretha, 70s Aretha to 80s Aretha. 80s Aretha to 90s Aretha. People Bryson did an interview this past weekend on CNN, and he basically said, listen, she was at such a level that she knew she was different, and that created a sense of isolation and a sense of loneliness. Even though she was a people person, even though she would throw these parties, even though she, you know, wasn't like Howard Hughes and, you know, just, you know, basically sitting in a room somewhere going and you know, losing her mind. I don't think it was to that level. But again, when you have to reach that level of talent, you know you're different. You know you're different. You know there's no one like you. And, you know, of course it will never happen, but if I could ask Aretha Franklin one question, it would be, did you love being Aretha Franklin? Or how was it like? What was it like to be Aretha Franklin? Day in, day out. And I wouldn't even say in front. I would frame the question? I wouldn't even say performing. I would say in terms of when you were, if you were by yourself, or if you were, you know, on a regular day-to-day basis. Put the performance, put the touring, put all that aside. Because we know she loved to perform. She performed over the course of her career for millions. Inaugurations, Kennedy Center, she did, you name it, she did it. Billy Preston had a quote back from a 2014 book that was written by David Ritz. Here's what he said. I'll pull it up here. She could be hiding out in her house in Detroit for years. She could go decades without taking a plane or flying off to Europe. She could cancel half her gigs and infuriate every producer and promoter in the country. She can sing all kinds of jive-ass songs that are beneath her. She could go into her diva act and turn off the world. But on any given night, when that lady sits down at a piano and gets her body and soul all over some righteous song, she'll scare the shit out of you, and you'll swear that she's still the best fucking singer this fucked up country has ever produced. That's Billy Preston. From a David Ritz book that was written 2014, The Life of Aretha Franklin. And that pretty much sums it up, like, to be honest with you. If you could sum up Aretha Franklin in a paragraph, I think that I don't see how you could sum her up any better than that. Considering a lot of stuff that you read, a lot of interviews that you see, that to me sums it up perfectly. And again, I know this becomes, when someone of this caliber passes away, you know, the first thing that is said is we'll never see the likes of this person again. Well, I think that goes without saying when you talk about Aretha Franklin, that she is not a once in a generational talent, but a once in a lifetime talent. Funeral services will be August 31st at surely a Detroit church that's going to seat about 4,000 people. And I'm sure it'll be televised, similar to what Michael Jackson's was back in 2009. She had that kind of outpouring, and, you know, she was beloved by, you know, most of her peers. I can't say all of her peers, but she was beloved by many. Heard a lot of, you know, just great things over the weekend when people were describing, talking about her. And again, you know, she's a human. At the end of the day, just phenomenal singer. But she still, at the end of the day, was a human being. She was a diva. We know she didn't like Patti LaBelle. You understood that. That was a little, I'm not going to call it a rivalry because I love Patti LaBelle. Patti LaBelle can't hold a candle to Aretha Franklin. But we know that anytime she felt threatened by an up-and-coming singer who was younger, that you know, rubbed her the wrong way. And Peebo Bryson said the best. She was the queen of her court. And everybody knew that she was the queen. So I even read a story where she even got annoyed when Beyonce called Tina Turner the queen. Like that type of stuff bothered her. Because she knew she was the best. So it's, you know, certainly understandable for her to be annoyed by thinking somebody's coming for her throne. But you know, she will be without, you know, the thing about music and the thing about artistry that I love is it never dies. You know, the person can die, but you can listen to her music forever. Same, you know, likes of Ray Charles, Michael Jackson. So, you know, you already have had her, one of her albums already has hit the top 10 list, which is no surprise. First time she's had a top 10 album since the early 90s. And I'm sure over the course of the next couple of weeks, maybe even a couple of months, even months coming, that she'll be all over the Billboard charts with various songs and albums from some of her greatest hits. So Aretha Franklin again, dead at the age of 76. Just getting started here on this latest edition of the Real Deal Podcast, 39 minutes after the 7 o'clock hour, as we discuss the world of sports and pop culture. Of course, this week there was no power. Again, I've already expressed, I don't understand why he took a week off. It made zero sense. But if you're someone who hadn't seen the previous 7 episodes, gave you a chance to catch up on that. So they'll be back in at it come 12:01. You know, August 26, 12:01, where, you know, it should be an exciting ending to the season in terms of the last 3 episodes. So you'll have that. Insecure, Better Call Saul, you know, off to pretty good starts as far as their new seasons. I don't even watch Ballers anymore. I've been off that for the last couple of years or so. So, yeah, Better Call Saul coming on tonight. Insecure. Insecure seems not to be affected by the loss of Jay Ellis for this season. So I think the momentum carrying off last season has definitely carried into this season. And I'm happy. And I'll say this about Better Call Saul. The best move they could have done was getting rid of Chuck, without question. That was the best move. Maybe it was a season too late, but it should have came a season earlier in my standpoint. But that, you know, now you can get into the Mike stuff, the Gus, the manager, you know, that whole relationship. Mike and Gus and Lydia and some of those characters are cousins. So, you know, Salamanca. So that those storylines can kind of take shape now they've gotten rid of, you know, the Chuck. Now they've gotten rid of Chuck again. One season of Chuck I thought was fine. 2 seasons of Chuck was decent, was enough. 3 seasons was way too much of the Chuck. Michael, he was brilliantly played by Michael McKean. He's a very good actor. We know Michael McKean can act, and we know how talented of a performer he is. But it was time to go. That character went a season too long, and I like where the show is at through the first course of the first 2 episodes. As far as the NFL goes, there's a lot of talk about this helmet rule. And a lot of complaining about how players are going to adjust to it. You got coaches already saying guys are going to lose jobs. You know, people, coaches, you know, there are going to be some jobs lost over it, whether it's in coaching or players, whether it's coaching. Here's what I'll say. Here's the elephant in the room. I watched a few of those highlights on the calls that were made over the weekend in regards to the helmet rule. It's not the rule, it's the officiating. That's the elephant in the room, and that's the problem in the NFL right now that has not improved since the disaster on that Monday night when Green Bay was robbed at Seattle with the hole when the ball hit the ground and it was on the Hail Mary. NFL officiating is mediocre. Putting the kind is mediocre at best. And if the NFL, if this season, like this season will be an absolute joke with these new, with this new helmet rule, if the officiating does not improve. The NFL, I don't know what the NFL needs to do, whether it's hiring full-time officials, whether it's getting, you know, younger officials, what, I don't know what they, having a year-round training program with their officiating. The NFL, from what I saw over the course of the weekend with those calls, those were just calls. Those were absolute missed calls. It wasn't about the rule. It was just bad officiating. So I don't care what the rules are. If the officiating is, if the officiating is terrible, officiating is going to be terrible. It doesn't matter what the rules are. Players, listen, players adjust. Think about who we're talking about here. NFL players, they go through audibles, they adjust to every day. These guys are resilient. They'll eventually adjust if they want to, you know, if they don't want to lose, have money taken out of their pockets, or they want playing time, they'll eventually adjust to the rules. No, I'm not worrying about the players. My concern will be with the officials. And that's something the NFL has yet to fix, the officiating. Don't worry about it. Doesn't matter what rules you have if your officiating is terrible. So that to me is what needs to be fixed. So we'll see how it goes into the season. Again, I'm not concerned about the players and they're adjusting to this helmet rule. I think the players will be fine. They'll watch enough video. They'll get used to how the game is called. It might take a couple games. It might take a first month of the season, but they'll adjust. It might take an entire season. Eventually, they'll get it. But it's hard to adjust. It's almost hard to. Almost impossible, excuse me, to adjust to bad officiating. NBA, John Lucas believes that NBA owners want to have access to players' mental health records. John Lucas came out and says he believes that 40% of players in the NBA have mental health issues. You remember earlier in the season, you had DeMar DeRozan and Kevin Love both address mental health issues or their struggles with mental health. And, you know, I give them all the credit in the world. It was definitely courageous. But as far as players having to submit any personal medical records, especially those kind of records to owners, I think that's just absolutely ridiculous. Because first of all, don't tell me that you're not going to sign a player to a $150 million contract if that guy can go out there and get you 25 and 12, and you know, be a franchise player. You don't care what, like, that's not let's not kid ourselves. If Kevin Durant came out and said he had mental health issues, you think he wouldn't? You think Golden State wouldn't sign him for the Supermax next year? If he goes out there and then puts, basically 27-7-5 and becomes the Finals MVP for a third straight year, you don't think he's getting paid? So forget about this idea that those access to those records will determine what players get or will determine what players will be signed. It's just that is ridiculous. It will always come down to, in the NBA and in most sports, performance. If you perform, you will get paid. If you don't, you won't, for the most part. You perform at a high level, you're going to get paid a lot of money. And there are certain things that just, to me, and, you know, maybe I'm biased because I'm a private person, but there are certain things that just, it's not anybody's business. I don't care how much money you're paying me. First of all, you don't need to know what I'm thinking. You don't need to know any mental issues that I've dealt with. It's none of your business. This is flat out none of your business. Now, if you're an owner, what you can do is provide services. You want to come out your pocket and provide additional professional services on the teams, therapists, psychologists. Once you do, you can do that. And I could choose as a player, I could choose to use those services if I so choose to, instead of having coming out of my pocket. Once you include that in the medical insurance, that's what the NBA can do, because most people who try to use those services have to come out of pocket. That's not part of most medical plans, I would venture to say. So again, NBA is making money hand over foot. If they want to, if they're so concerned about their players, include that in terms of their health care package. But you don't need to know who has anxiety, who suffers from depression. You don't need to know that at all, because it's not going to affect what you do as an owner in terms of how you're going to pay a player. It's not. That player who is an all-star, if you don't choose to sign him, somebody else will. If you choose not to sign him because of his depression, somebody else will in a heartbeat. So again, I don't understand, outside of just being outright nosy, I don't understand what the owners would hope to accomplish by this. And John Lucas, and I respect John Lucas a lot. John Lucas has done his yeoman's work as far as helping players out with drug abuse and these types of programs. But John Lucas, you can't go out there making a blanket statement saying you believe 40% of players where's the data collection? Are you taking surveys on every player about their mental health issues? Like, there's no way you could just throw a number out there like that. That's just not fair to the players. And again, I respect John Lucas has done a lifetime worth of work as far as drug treatment programs, and he's had his struggles, and I respect John Lucas an awful lot for what he's done for players during the course of his outside of his playing career since he got retired from playing. He's done a lot over the past 20, 25 years with some of the treatment centers and some of the stuff he's done off the floor. It's not a knock against John Lucas, but I just don't think you can come out with just throw a number out there like that and expect us to, like, it carries no weight. There's no credence to it, because I don't know how you prove that. I don't know what facts do you have to back up that number? So, again, it's none of the owner's business, none of my business, none of your business about a player's or mine's or yours mental health issues, unless we choose to make it your business or my business or their business. Fifty minutes after the 7 o'clock hour on this last edition of the Real Deal podcast. Of course, over the weekend you had Nicki Minaj come out with her album. Her album dropped on Friday. It debuted at number two, at about 185,000. Let me correct that. Her album did not drop on Friday. It dropped last week. This was the second week it was out. But the first week, it right now, in terms of the Billboard charts, it is at number two, 185,000 units. So behind Travis Scott. But according to Nicki Minaj, the world is against her. Leading up to the album release, and even through the album, recent album, Nicki Minaj has done nothing but paint herself as the victim, done nothing but complain, whether it's about DJ Self, whether it's about Safari, whether it's about this and that and Spotify. She's done nothing but just whine. And, you want to ask the question, where is this coming from? Is it just to drive up album sales, or is there some hidden meaning behind this? And what I'm gonna tell you is, Nicki Minaj is threatened by the rise of Cardi B. Right now, Nicki Minaj is no longer the, you know, the leading lady of rap and hip hop. It is Cardi B season. Nicki Minaj, and not only is it Cardi B season in terms of hip hop, but in terms of, more importantly, and anybody in hip hop understands this, you know, Queen of New York. Cardi owns two titles right now. She's the leading lady in hip hop, and she's the leading lady in hip hop in the state of New York, which carries as much weight as just being the leading lady in hip hop. That queen and king of New York is a real thing in the world of hip hop. It absolutely is, because New York is the birthplace of hip hop. So, you know, I compare it to the pretty girl with the curl. You come in a classroom, you're younger. There's always one girl that was the Miss Popular. Another girl would come in, new girl would come in, who was better looking, and all of a sudden she's getting that attention. Cardi B is the pretty girl, with the curl. And Nicki Minaj can't stand it. She detests it. And I was having this discussion with somebody on Friday. You know what? I'm fine with her detesting it. With her not liking Cardi B. And can we go back to just having an old school straight, I don't like Cardi B. I think she's going to be a flash in the pan. I'm going to make better music. Like, just come out and say, I don't believe Cardi B's on my level. Let's have a battle. Let's go Nas, Jay-Z, what, 2000, circa 2001. Let's go, you know, let's battle. It is the essence of hip-hop. Instead, don't get upset when people, you know, say things to compare Cardi B and Nicki Minaj. Because if you're Nicki Minaj, you know you don't like Cardi B. You know you're hating on Cardi B right now. Just come out, drop a diss track, come at her. She has taken over your throne. She owns New York right now. Forget about Travis Scott. Forget about Safari. Your real enemy is Cardi B. That's what you should be concerned about. Forget about DJ Self. All this noise is behind the fact that Cardi B has taken over New York. And I just want Nicki Minaj to come out and just own that. Just be like, look, I believe Cardi B. I'm Nicki Minaj. I've been doing this for close to a decade. I was here before her. I'll be here after her. She's a flash in the pan. I'm going to show you, and this is why I'm going to show you. And then drop some dope music, drop a classic album. Now her album is solid. It was a good album. It wasn't great. It wasn't a knockout. Nobody likes a complainer. Nobody likes a whiner at the end of the day. Nobody likes sour grapes. Especially when Cardi B is doing the polar opposite and just out here basically living her best life. Just had a baby, smiling, grateful. Not throwing shade to nobody. Just out here living her best life. I will say this, though. The conversation around hip-hop has become NBA and NFL-like from a standpoint of it hasn't stopped. Yes, it has not stopped since Finesse, Bruno Mars and Cardi B dropped Finesse January 3rd. That conversation has been going. Nipsey Hussle, it's been Kanye summer. You had Drake. It was Drake in the spring. Then you had Drake and Pusha T in the summer again. Like that kind of, now you have Nicki Minaj. That conversation has kept it. Like hip hop right now is in a great place. I don't care what anybody says. I don't care if you're over 40, over 35, talking about the good old days in the 90s, whatever. You can't deny the state of hip hop as far as the attention that it's receiving. You go look at the top, look at all the quality music that has come out this year. Kanye, Nipsey, Nas, Pusha T. Drake's individual hits, not maybe his album, but he has a lot of individual hits. Black Thought. A lot of dope music coming out. Cardi B's album, of course. So that conversation has been, has not stopped. But again, if you're Nicki Minaj, stop whining and put it to wax. I mean, put it to wax. I know she released the album. Come at Cardi B. You need to drop a Cardi B diss track. That's what we need right now. Tell us how you really feel. Forget all this other nonsense. Nobody cares about what you think about Travis Scott. No one cares about what you think about DJ Self. I know you don't like Cardi B. I know you're jealous of Cardi B right now. And it's only, to me, it's not so much, it's jealousy, but it's also a competitive, this is competition. If somebody comes out and takes your belt, you should be angry. You should want your belt back. Right now, Cardi B got the heavyweight belt, period. She got the heavyweight belt, so, you know, the ball is in Nicki Minaj's court. Right now, she's not shooting or passing. She's just dribbling with her head down. That's going to wrap it up for this latest edition of the Real Deal Podcast. Like always, we tell it like it is with no apologies. Thanks for listening.